Hello, I'm Rafiq, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery channel.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to Garbled Twistery Season 1.5, and today we are taking a long, hard look at our second presidential candidate for 1789, Johnny.
No,
not Johnny Adams. We already talked about him last episode. No, today we're talking about John Jay. Yes, the John Jay. The John Jay that has, like, every other elementary school and courthouse and state park named after him or something. Yep. I'm going to give you the full lowdown on his life up until the first election, and if he becomes a candidate later on, I'll post this episode and tell you what the new information is. All right? All right. So, the story of John Jay begins way before his birth, like back in the 15 and 1600s. Yeah, there were these Protestant French people called Huguenots just hanging around in England, and they were tolerated by the Catholics at best. At worst, the Catholics would form angry mobs and kill a bunch of them. Yeah, that's basically what happened with the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre. Even after that craziness, King Louis XIV passed this crazy Edict of Fontainebleau, which said, quote, "All you Huguenots are heretics now, so get out of here," unquote. So that forced Johnny Jay's grandpappy to pack his freaking bags and move all the way to Virginia. But then he realized nobody who lives in Virginia makes any money, so Grandpa moved to the Big Apple, where he was able to make a merchant empire. Then he gave birth to Johnny Jay's dad, who became a freaking pro at trading fur and logs and probably toothpaste. And then some lady named Mary noticed that this guy was making bank, so she married the snot out of him, and they made 10 babies. 3 of them died. And the baby we're gonna focus on for the rest of this episode is none other than Johnny Jay himself. So, he was born in the Big Apple, but like the whole family ended up moving to Rye, New York, because this smallpox thing was going around, and like, it blinded 2 of Johnny Jay's siblings already, so yeah, they had to get out of there. As for education, Johnny Jay was a freaking weirdo nerd, just like most of the Founding Fathers were. Mother Mary homeschooled him until he was 8. Then he studied with a priest, then he went to college at the age of 14. 14. 14. Yes, he was 14 years old studying at freaking Columbia freaking University. He wound up being a Whig, which is pretty much being liberal for the time period. Like, the Whiggies believed in religious freedom and also believed that the Catholics ought to spread some of that power to the little guys, you know?
Greedy Catholics.
So, when Johnny Jay graduated, he made the decision to be a lawyer, just like Johnny Adams. So he studied and got his lawyer license. And then after that, he became a secretary for the Committee of Correspondence, which was basically an open secret government operation New York was running without permission from the T-Sippers. Everybody in New York liked this smarty pants man, so they sent Johnny Jay to the Continental Congress. He was definitely afraid of the poor people taking over everything, so he, like, wanted to smooth things over with the tea sippers while also politely resisting the crazy taxes. But then, tea-sipping soldiers started burning towns to the ground, and he was like, quote, "We try being nice, and this is how those tea sippers repay us. Wow, I guess we do need to kick them in the tuchus," unquote. So, while he was getting all revolutionary and stuff, he married the daughter of a governor, and his dad freaking died while he was traveling the world, so that means he had to take care of his 2 siblings, who got blinded by that adorable little disease called smallpox. Yes, I mentioned this. His brother, that did have eyes, was constantly asking to borrow money, because it always somehow disappeared when he touched it. And his other brother, with eyes, went completely loyalist on the whole revolution thing, which made Johnny Jay look bad at the cocktail parties. Not at the cocktail parties, man. So, I think it's safe to say that as far as his life went, Johnny J was just babysitting everybody and babysitting himself as well. And that's hard work, I tell ya. Oh, and by the way, the two places he lived in Rye and Katona are still there if you ever want to, like, take a tour of them, get some free complimentary peanuts from the tour guide, perhaps. You never know. Anyways, I talked about his Continental Congress stuff and how he was a delegate and stuff. When he came back from the first Continental meeting, he was put on this weird New York cult thingy called the Committee of 60. It was basically a bunch of people who walked around making sure that people were actually boycotting the British stuff. I guess there were too many patriots who had a secret stash of Cadbury creams under their floorboards. He was also elected to New York's specific Congress, and he quickly came up with a constitution for the state of New York, not unlike Johnny Adams, who quickly wrote up a constitution for Massachusetts at around the same freaking time. Okay, remember the Mighty Morphin Independence episode where I talked about how for some reason New York didn't freaking sign the darn Declaration of Independence? Well, Johnny J's excuse was that he was so busy being a congressman for just New York that he didn't have the time to show up. That's right. New Yorkers, I tell ya, they don't got any time for anything not New York related. Always walking down the sidewalk with their pants on fire. Boy, I tell ya. New York loved him so much, they even made him a Supreme Court judge for just New York for a couple years. Will he ever be president of something that wasn't New York-centric? Yes. In fact, he was president of the Continental Congress for, like, a year. For its final year, actually. So he basically didn't do anything except sit around and look pretty. Okay. Now seems like a good spot to go over this dude's opinions and stuff. What did he have a stick up his butt about? Let's see. Johnny Adams was all about trials with juries, and Johnny J had a stick up his butt about slavery and religion. So, Johnny J, he, like, had slaves, but he didn't like that. I mean, he still kept his slaves, but he didn't like slavery.
What?
Like, he wrote this whole letter to England where he was all like, "Hey, you treat black people just like you treat us." I mean, that's a pretty silly comparison on many, many fronts. But I mean, he did try to write a law to free the slaves in 1777, but, like, nobody wanted to do that. He did try again in 1785 and failed again, but he did better this time. The reason why I say that is because the reason why he couldn't free the slaves in New York the second time around has less to do with people wanting to keep their slaves and more to do with people not being able to agree on exactly how free the slaves should be. So, yeah, we're getting there, New York. We're getting there. But, like, that same year, he even founded this thing called the New York Manumission Society, which was an organization that lobbied in the New York Congress to free the freaking slaves already. And it also organized, like, full-blown boycotts of newspapers that had slave ads in them and merchants who sold slaves as well. It also provided legal counsel for free black people and free black people who were recaptured and were about to be sold back into slavery. Oh, and this organization also built the African Free School. I mean, it was a tiny school, but it was still a school specifically for the children of slaves and for freed black people.
Impressive.
Johnny J and all his rich white guy friends were taking many steps in the right direction in regards to freeing the black people while still owning slaves in their own homes. Yeah, that's weird. Did they not desire to fully embody the abolitionist spirit completely? I don't know. As far as religion goes, Johnny J was kind of everywhere. Like, he was full-blown Church of England at first, then he went to a Protestant Episcopal church after the Revolution, and then he was a warden of some, like, church in New York, and he really didn't want Catholics in office. Like, he yelled a lot about that. I mean, what can I say? He's a Whig, I tell ya. So now, I'm gonna talk about his international travels and stuff, because everybody loves hearing about vacations. So, Johnny got hired to go to Spain and yell at people. I mean, he was doing his best to get Spain Senpai to notice the US as its own country, but Spain wasn't buying it. Probably because if Spain went ahead and did that, their colonists would start being hella ungrateful like the Patriots were being. So yeah, Johnny J also flew to Paris to help negotiate the piece of paper that would freaking end the revolution. And Johnny Adams was there too. And like, apparently Johnny Adams liked Johnny J's spunk. And so did everybody else. They made the guy the Secretary of Foreign Affairs. That's how much I liked his spunk. But what does that mean? Well, it means that Johnny J was basically trying to figure out how to make the U.S. look fancy to everybody else. That means making borders and literally making money. Like, literally, like making money and paying people back for their guns and fighting those pirates. Arrgh! Okay, I got one last thing I have to say about this guy, because now this election is coming up real soon. Remember in the Confetti is Useless in Congress episode how I talked about how Alexander Hammy Tammy freaking hated the Articles of Confetti? Well, he had a big old meeting in Philly to make a new constitution thingy, and Johnny J couldn't make it. But he did help out by writing some articles in this thingy called the Federalist Papers. It's basically like 85 freaking articles telling everybody why the Articles of Confetti are stupid and weak and everything needs to be rewritten. My goodness! He even ran around making speeches about it. So, yeah. That's the history of Johnny J up until the first election. If he ever comes back for another election, you know the deal. I'll post this freaking episode again, but I'll make sure to tell you where you could find the new information, because, you know, things happen in between elections, dude. So, yeah, if you got something to say about this episode, this podcast, or life in general, you can find Garbled Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to the garbledtwistery.net website and send a message in the context section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafik, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbledtwistery.net. Next week, we look at the next candidate, Johnny number 3, otherwise known as Johnny Rutledge. Get hyped, yo.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
I guess there were too many Patriots who had a secret stash of Cadbury creams under their floorboards.